UCF inbounding on the side of the front court. Allen will trigger. Everybody in the building standing, all 18,000. Allen looking, gets it in up top to Taylor. 5 seconds, he's on the right wing. He drives inside, leans in, puts it up, no good. Tap back, no good. Dawkins, Duke rebounds, and the ball game is over. The Blue Devils escape.
Well, that would have messed up everybody's bracket. Duke escaping with the win over Central Florida yesterday in the NCAA tournament. And you had the feel for Central Florida, unless you're a Duke fan. I think everybody in America except Duke fans were cheering for Central Florida yesterday. And it was interesting because Central Florida's head coach Johnny Dawkins, I remember him lighting up Kansas in the Final Four in 1986, second leading scorer in Duke history. He has his jersey retired or up in the rafters, hanging in the rafters there at Duke at Cameron Indoor Stadium. And he's head coach at Central Florida. And his son, Aubrey Dawkins, who grew up in the Duke program because, of course, he was a youngin' when Johnny Dawkins was assistant coach under Mike Krzyzewski at Duke. He was fantastic yesterday, Aubrey Dawkins, with 32 points. But Central Florida had a chance on an alley-oop to push the lead to 6 with, I think, under a minute to go. And it was Dawkins who just couldn't quite handle the ball. Duke came right back down, hit a 3. Then Duke was down, what was it, 2 points, I think it was. No, they were down 3 points. 76-73, Zion Williamson could have been called a charge. It wasn't. And then he was fouled, made the bucket. Duke was down 1. And then the free throw by Williamson, he missed. And it was rebounded by R.J. Barrett, who probably got away with a push-off. But I will say there were some calls earlier in the game that went against Duke. So we can always point the one call and say, well, that's what determined the game. But there were other calls that were missed earlier in the game. But I think it's clear that normally that would have been called a charge on most players, but maybe not Zion in the last seconds. And then a push-off by R.J. Barrett to get the rebound. But having said that, earlier in the game, Taco Fall got away with a foul that would have been pretty big impact on the game, too. So having said all that, Central Florida had a chance to win at the end, and their shots, two of their shots, just missed. And very similar to when Duke had a chance to beat Kansas in the regional finals last year in Omaha, their last-second shot by Grayson Allen spun all the way around the cup and then came off, and it went to overtime, and Kansas won. I'm telling you, the fine line between winning and losing at this level, even in the second round of the NCAA tournament, is as razor thin as it possibly could be. So it was really tough for Central Florida to lose yesterday. And I kept thinking to myself as I'm watching this, this is why college football has it wrong. This is why college football has it wrong. And I'm surprised national media hasn't run with this. I know it's NCAA tournament time, but this is, Johnny Dawkins said this back during the football season. Central Florida went undefeated 2 straight regular seasons and don't even get a chance to compete for a national championship because the powers and the money that's out there in college football won't allow it to happen because we have to have a 4-team playoff when we could easily have an 8, a 12, or a 16. Every other level of football can do it. Why can't college football? They can. There's no excuse. They can. They choose not to. And it leaves the little guys out, and they can't compete against the Goliaths in football. Would they win? I don't know, but they should have the chance, the opportunity. That's what makes NCAA tournament so great. You have the little guy like Central Florida, a 9 seed yesterday, nearly knocking off Duke. It is easier, and listen to this very carefully, it is easier for Central Florida to win a national championship in basketball than it is in football. And Central Florida was a 9 seed. Central Florida didn't win their conference. Their football team has gone undefeated the last 2 regular seasons. Beat a SEC team in a bowl game 2 years ago. So when I'm watching Central Florida right there with Duke has a chance to win, I'm thinking, why doesn't Central Florida get the same opportunity in football? There is no excuse not for them to have that opportunity. If you go undefeated 2 straight regular seasons, you should at least be in a playoff field of 8 or 12 or 16. I'm not saying you should be one of the top 4 teams, but I don't. The playoff is so limited when it comes to college football. It'll water down the regular season. No, it won't. Has it watered down the NCAA tournaments? Has it watered down the college basketball regular season? No, it hasn't. Because then it comes down to seeding. Your whole regular season helps determine where you're seeded, where you go, if you're going to be close to home. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm so tired of hearing about how, well, there's the bowl game connections and tie-ins here, and we can't do this. We can't. If you made it a full-fledged playoff, trust me, one, you bring in more teams that have a chance to win a national championship. Just look what baseball's done. I can't believe I'm saying this. Baseball actually figured it out. They widened their playoff field and added wild cards in each league. And if without the wild card, the Royals would have never made it to the World Series in 2014 because they didn't win the division that year. And who knows? Maybe they wouldn't have made it to the World Series at all in 15 after not getting that experience in 2014. So the more teams have a chance to winning a championship or can stay in the race longer, creates more excitement for every single town's or city's fan base. So why don't we do that with college football? Because in college basketball, when the tournament begins, VCU was number 11 seed back in 2010, I think it was, and they were in the first four, and they made it all the way to the Final Four. Butler's made it to the national championship. They did it back-to-back years and almost beat Duke one of those years. We've seen North Carolina State, a low seed, win it all in 83. KU, a 6 seed, win in 88. UConn has won it as a 6 seed. George Mason made it to the Final Four as an 11 seed. LSU's made it to the Final Four before as a 10 seed. Here's the thing. When the NCAA tournament comes out and the bracket comes out, every single team in America can say, I have a chance to win a national championship. 68 teams have a chance at a national championship. In college football, four do. Four do. Well, there's others that have a chance during the season. Of course they do. But you're deciding four teams in college football, over 300 college football teams in Division I, and you're going to pick out four. College basketball's got it right. This is why. Now, the unfortunate thing, though, is the heartbreak of it all. You're so close to pulling off this huge monumental upset. Aubrey Dawkins, 32 points. He was phenomenal yesterday against Duke. He talks about that heartbreak.
On BJ's floater, and it just didn't go. Rolled around the rim. I mean, heartbreak. That's the only way to sum it up. I mean, we spent all this time, you know, trying to get the putback on BJ's floater, and it just didn't go. Rolled around the rim. I mean, heartbreak. That's the only way to sum it up. I mean, we spent all this time, you know, trying to get to the stage, and obviously wanted our journey to continue. And so when that doesn't happen, it's, I mean, when you invest this much in it, it breaks your heart.
I feel for Aubrey Dawkins because he had a fantastic game, but he's going to think back to the lob on the alley-oop that he just couldn't quite handle cleanly. That would have put UCF up six and brought the house down had he dunked it. And then he, on the follow tip, he nearly tipped it in. Nearly tipped it in. I love when people calling him on the air. So anyway, and people that should know better too. So it's one of those things where Central Florida was so close. Now, you wonder if coaches care. You wonder if coaches care. Sometimes coaches get a bad rap. More on that coming up here on the show. Tom Izzo getting upset with a player that became a big national topic, which is ridiculous. But anyway, here's Johnny Dawkins, Central Florida head coach, after the game talking to his players. And if you listen carefully, you can hear players are sobbing like a baby after losing. You put so much in, and you're so close to winning, and then the ball rolls off the rim, and your season's over just like that.
What you did this year, not just tonight, you did this year representing, you know, our program, representing our university. Couldn't be more proud of how you handled yourself on and off the court. And you guys have been terrific. And look, man, we always said it's going in two ways when you invest like we invest. We're going to end, man, celebrating. We're going to end crying. We're going to end in tears. We end in tears. That's because we invested, as I said before, so much in each other and so much in what we were doing. And again, man, I told you guys before, I love you guys. It's been amazing coaching this group. And like I said, for us, we got a lot of good memories, man. A lot of good memories. We've accomplished a lot of amazing things this year. And I know that doesn't, you know, do anything for us right now, but at some point in time it will. And so again, I know this is gonna hurt. It's gonna hurt for a while. I've been in it before and the same thing. But we're proud of you guys. We're proud of the effort and the energy that you gave us all year long. Chad, what are we gonna say, man?
Hey, family on three, family on three. One, two, three,
family!
That's an inside look and listen to the locker room at Central Florida. There's a coach that wanted his team to win so bad. Honestly, Coach Krzyzewski said after the game, Central Florida deserved to win. They did. I thought Central Florida outplayed Duke. I thought they had outstanding defensive plan. Duke's got all these McDonald All-Americans. They've got Zion Williamson, who's the greatest player that's ever lived, according to the national media. And yet, Central Florida's right there, a chance to win the ballgame. You know, I watched that game yesterday, and I think to the question that people have asked me before, and I've wondered myself, would you rather have lost that game yesterday if you're Central Florida? If you knew you were going to lose in heartbreaking fashion, would you rather lose that game by 20? Would you rather lose like Kansas did the other day? Or would you rather lose like you did yesterday to Duke? And some people will say, well, you lost in the final seconds. You're in position to win. But isn't the loss easier to take if you just got beat by Duke by 20? And I think it would be. Because when you lose by 20 or 30 points, you're like, hey, it just wasn't our night. But when you lose in a game like that where you had the lead late in the game and one or two plays could have gone here or there, an official's call or whistle could have gone this way or that way, or if the ball just would have rolled through the net, you win. And that's just going to be anguish for Central Florida and their kids for the rest, honestly, for the rest of their lives. They'll be thinking about that a little bit. The pain will subside, trust me. There's worse things in life than losing a basketball game. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I get all that. Got to put it in perspective. But it hurts. They put in a lot of work, these young men and women, in the women's tournament as well. And then to, you know, I've always said I admire those that go out for sports, because there's some people don't like sports. Some people poo-poo sports. But one thing I can say about sports is you're putting yourself in front of a stage to more often than not fail than succeed. You're putting yourself out there willing to fail in order to succeed. And there's so many people out there that are so scared of failure that they don't even try. And those people aren't going to get anywhere in life. They won't. You have to be willing to put yourself out there to fail in order to succeed. Some of the greatest inventors of all time in our country, including Thomas Edison, failed multiple times before figuring it out. Best coaches in the world lose games that they feel like they shouldn't have. Everybody has an off day, a bad day. It's how you deal with that adversity. In Central Florida, their coach, man, I got mad respect for Johnny Dawkins and what he said there to his team, and it was a tough loss for Central Florida. We'll talk more about coaching. Scott Van Pelt had an interesting editorial on ESPN Sports Center the other night, and it was absolutely one of the best things I've seen on television in quite some time when it comes to sports. More on that in a moment. Now let's shift our attention to the brackets, where in our bracket contest, Ron Greif is in the lead. And I don't know how many people turn in brackets. Dusty didn't leave the information as to how many people entered our bracket contest, but I'm in 62nd. Dusty's in 61st. My 5-year-old's in 65th, so I'm at least better than him. My 12-year-old's in 43rd, and my wife's in 20th place. Once again, bracket challenge. Us guys that talk sports a lot, we either overanalyze it or we're just not good at picking the games. People that don't study it all year long do better than us, like my wife. Happens every year, not surprised at all. In fact, I thought it'd be funny if a 5-year-old won our bracket contest. Well, that doesn't look like that's going to happen. So we'll keep you updated on that. Where shall we begin? K-State or KU? Let's begin with KU because that was the most recent game, and that was on Saturday night. Now, luckily for me, I got sick and was in bed and didn't have to watch the game live. I did go back and I watched a good chunk of it yesterday after I recuperated, and this was just the same old story. I mean, Kansas went up against an athletic team that could shoot threes. They're a fast team. And I thought Kansas was going to lose in the second round. I kept telling everyone that would listen, but quit worrying about Kansas City. Whether you're a Jayhawk fan, quit worrying about it. Don't buy your tickets. Don't get all excited about it as a K-State fan, getting all mad because Kansas is going to Kansas City. The only way Kansas is going to Kansas City is to watch it from the stands. And that's what's happened. Kansas had a thing called youth. You know, I hear all this, well, Kansas has all these McDonald All-Americans. Yeah, they have some of those. Yes, that's true. Tell me another team in the country that starts 4 freshmen. I'm listening. How many teams change over their complete starting lineup? Last year, KU went to the Final Four, a completely brand new starting 5 at the end of the year. Because Udoka Azubuike and LeGerald Vick played, you know, quite a bit last year on that Final Four team. Udoka out after 9 games with injury. Vic left the team and did not come back. So you had a completely brand new starting five, and four of them are freshmen, and one wasn't even allowed to play until January because he was redshirted. So does Kansas have talent? Yes, they have talent. But this was a Kansas team that was always trying to adjust on the fly and never recovered from Udoka Azubuike's injury. Now, having said that, I don't think Kansas makes the Final Four with Udoka healthy anyway, because I think that inexperience, and we saw it with Dotson and with Grimes and Abaji and McCormick, although McCormick wouldn't play as much if Udoka was healthy, but you just don't go deep in the tournament unless you've got the Fab Five from Michigan, or if you've got R.J. Barrett and Zion Williamson, or Anthony Davis, and remember them, Kentucky won a national championship that one year with a whole bunch of freshmen. It rarely happens. And Kansas has had an inexperience issue all year long. Why do you think Kansas struggled on the road all year long? What happens to your role players and your younger players when they go on the road? Do they play worse or better on the road than at home? Always worse. There might be a game where they play great on the road, but I'm talking, you look at the whole body of work. You take, okay, we played 12 road games, we played 12 home games. Look at the statistics. They will not lie. The numbers will not lie when it comes to that. And I never thought Kansas was going to do anything in this tournament at all. In fact, I thought they might lose first round. But I had them going out second round. Auburn, I didn't think was going to stay hot. They have. And Kansas just got a bad matchup. We can get all caught up in the, well, Kansas may go to Kansas City. Or Tennessee might have to deal with Cincinnati in Cincinnati's backyard. Or, well, Kansas State's got to go to San Jose. Or, well, this isn't right. Why is Michigan State in this bracket and Michigan in the other bracket? Listen, it's about matchups. People need to quit worrying about seeding. I mean, if you're a 1 or a 2 or a 3 seed, yeah, that helps you a little bit. If you're a 4 seed, you're going to play a 1 seed in the Sweet 16. And you're vulnerable in the first round, you're going to play a 5 in the second round more than likely. It's about matchups, man. It has nothing to do with seeding most of the time. I mean, Central Florida yesterday is a 9 seed. I don't know if anybody's going to come close to doing what they did yesterday. So Duke got an unfavorable matchup. I mean, North Carolina got a really good matchup, Washington, in the second round. Duke got a tougher matchup, and Duke's the overall number one seed. It's about matchups. You could sit here and say Duke's got a better matchup in the Sweet 16 than they did in the second round. They know Virginia Tech. They played them multiple times this year. So don't get so caught up in, well, they're a 4 or a 3 seed, or, well, they're going to play close to home. Forget that. Focus on who they're playing. Who are they playing? Kansas had to play a team that spreads it out and shoots the 3 and gets up and down. And that is not the type of team Kansas wants to see in the tournament. Auburn wins, and they won easily.
The Auburn bench, a sea of smiles. Harper dribbles. The coaches walk toward center court. 3, 2, and 1. The Auburn Tigers rock the Kansas Jayhawks 89-75. The SEC champs are Sweet 16 bound for the first time in 16 years.
After the game, Bill Self said, hey, we just didn't have enough firepower.
You know, I am proud of our kids. I thought that we hung in there the second half and fought. You know, we didn't get a lot of stops, but we did play better second half. But we just didn't have enough ammunition to fight off what they threw at us early.
And Self said when the bracket came out, he had a feeling this could be a tough matchup.
We didn't muster up enough momentum like some past teams have to probably go on a run like other teams have. But being a 4 seed in the tournament, and so much of the tournaments is matchups as much as anything. And I got to be honest with you, when I saw Auburn as the 5 in our bracket, I'm like going, I just watched them play and they're fast. And those are the teams we obviously struggle the most against.
Absolutely. You think about it. Listen, they went to Texas Tech. They just get smoked. They got smoked. Lost by what? 29 at Texas Tech? What happened? Tech makes a whole bunch of threes. Things snowball. Kansas goes to Oklahoma. They get smoked, and they had to win that game to keep their Big 12 championship hopes alive. Kansas was not good on the road. I mean, they lost at West Virginia, for crying out loud. Listen, this was easy to see coming. This was easy to see coming. Inexperienced team, doesn't have a physical presence, and it doesn't shoot the 3 well at all, doesn't defend the 3 very well, not particularly fast, not nearly as deep as they should have been. I'm not saying Bill Self's out trying to coach a whole bunch of stiffs. He's not. He has talent to work with. But this whole team was set up to have the high-low game and two post players, Udoka Azubuike and Dedrick Lawson. Lawson had to play the five, and that's not his natural position at all. He had to play the four. Now, last year, KU got away with playing small, but they knew all year they're going to have to play small. And they also had Malik Newman, Svi Mykhailiuk, and Devontae Graham. They had experience, upperclassmen, and guys that could shoot the three. And this team didn't have any of that. And I still don't know how people got all riled up. I still have not understood it. I will probably never understand the horrible uproar about Kansas going to play in Kansas City. Because, as I said, even if Kansas would have made it to Kansas City, they would have been smoked by North Carolina. They were smoked by Auburn. And Auburn-North Carolina is going to be a fun matchup. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Auburn wins. But Kansas athletically doesn't match up against Auburn. They don't match up against North Carolina. They don't match up against a lot of really good teams in this tournament. And they got as good of a seed as they probably should have gotten, a four. And then everybody's just going crazy that Kansas is going to be playing in Kansas City. And like we said from the very beginning, last I checked, you had to win two games in Salt Lake before you can get to Kansas City. So Kansas is out. Disappointing season to Kansas. They're a preseason number one team. Injuries certainly hurt them. I never bought into Kansas was that dominant. I did think Kansas would win the Big 12 again. I did. I think Fran Franchella is probably right. If Udoka Azubuike's healthy, Kansas probably at least gets a share of the Big 12 title. I was thinking about this. What was the difference between Kansas and Kansas State this year in regards to finishing first and third? And it's interesting. KU and K-State did the exact same thing against Iowa State, against Texas Tech, against each other, against Baylor. These are the top teams in the Big 12. You know the difference was? K-State swept Oklahoma, and K-State swept West Virginia. That's it. That's the difference between Kansas and Kansas State this year in the Big 12. Kansas State swept West Virginia and Oklahoma. KU lost at Oklahoma. They lost at West Virginia. And that's interesting when we bring that up, because in past years, why does Kansas always win the Big 12? Because they win those games. They go to West Virginia and win a game that they're supposed to win. They go to Oklahoma. They find a way to win. This year, that didn't happen. Instead, it was K-State doing that. And that's why K-State and Texas Tech deserved to win the Big 12 title. They got it done. So a disappointing season for Kansas, but yet it's not like the sky is falling. There's so many programs in America who would love to be Kansas. You finish third in your conference, you go to the Big 12 tournament championship game, and then you get a four seed in the tournament, and you win a game in the tournament for the 13th consecutive year, and they would love to be in the round of 32 and be bounced. But the bar is pretty high at Kansas, as we know. Although I don't think the bar was super high for most KU fans going into the tournament. I think Sweet 16 was probably the best case scenario. Kansas avoided the first round upset, and they got the second round loss to Auburn. I don't think there's any shame in losing to Auburn. I do think it's a bummer that they got blown out. At the same time, it's probably easier to deal with when you just simply were outclassed. And Bruce Pearl says it's not an upset. I don't know who the heck would be calling it an upset. If you watch Kansas and Auburn play all year long, I don't know who in their right mind would say it's an upset.
I think the reality is this: our Auburn basketball team is a better team than the Kansas team. I think Bill will say that. We're tough to play against because we have 10 guys at play and they all contribute. So in some ways, it really wasn't an upset. I thought the better team won tonight.
It wasn't an upset. Auburn was the better team. Listen, the Big 12 is overrated again. Every year we go through this whole big thing about the Big 12 is good from top to bottom. The Big 12 is good. Just because your bottom and your top, there's a closer level between the bottom and the top. I mean, come on. The ACC's been the best conference in America for years. It continues to be. Want me to prove my point? Okay, gladly. There's 16 teams left in the NCAA tournament. Five of those 16 are teams from the ACC. Four are from the SEC. And one's from the Big 12. And this happens every year. Every year, the ACC has more teams left than we get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, than the Big 12, almost every single year. And I've said this before, and I'll say this again until I'm blue in the face. I do not judge a conference being the best conference in America because the 10th place team can beat the first place team. No, that just tells me the first place team isn't that great. Okay? If you're going to talk about a whole bunch of parity, you want a whole bunch of mediocre teams that beat up on each other, and you think that's the best conference in America, fine, you can have that conference. But if you let me draft a conference that I'll put my... You want to draft a conference that has the best chance to win a national championship and has more than one team that can win it all? You're going to pick the ACC every single year. Why? Duke, Virginia, North Carolina, all number one seeds. Virginia Tech, Florida State, four seeds in the Sweet 16. The SEC this year was much better than it's been in the past. Tennessee's in my Final Four in my bracket, so Kentucky's in the Elite Eight in my bracket. They've moved on. LSU is in the Sweet 16, and Auburn, who won the SEC tournament. The SEC and the Big Ten, by the way, has, what, seven or eight teams that made the tournament? Listen, that pecking order to me is pretty simple. To me, ACC is the best conference in America because of the top heaviness. If you're going to draft a conference that's going to win a national championship, who are you going to bet on? I'm going to bet on ACC every day of the week. Now, if you're going to talk about who was the best conference throughout the year, I think you could make a case for the SEC. I think you can make a case for the Big Ten. And I think you still got to say it's the ACC. You got three number one seeds, for crying out loud. Those three clearly are better than the Big 12. And then the Big 12's fourth and the Pac-12's fifth when it comes to the Power Five. And it's really not even close. I mean, so I just, every year we hear this. And what team makes it to the Final Four besides Kansas out of the Big 12? Until other teams besides Kansas make the Final Four on a more regular basis out of the Big 12, this conference is not the best conference in America. And almost every single March, this has proven to be correct. Only one Big 12 team made it to the Sweet 16, and they very well could lose to Michigan in the very next round, and that's Texas Tech. So the Big 12, it's a nice conference, but let's just hold back on the every year, oh, they have this great record against the non-con, and Big 12 is underrated, or the Big 12 is really good, and people need to understand how great the Big 12 is. You can judge it any which way you want to define it. For me, defining the best conference in America is how good it is at the top. I'm not worried about, well, West Virginia would beat Boston College. That makes the Big 12 better. That's a silly argument. Really, really silly. Does anybody right now care if West Virginia beat Boston College head-to-head? Of course not. What do people care about? Championships. The Big 12 doesn't get them in college basketball. Or college football, for that matter. So, KU is done. No surprise there. Now we rewind back to, what was it, Friday? As Kansas State loses to UC Irvine. Once again, matchups. Now, I thought K-State would win this game. Dusty thought they would. Riley Gates thought they would. Brian Smoller thought they would. We all thought K-State was going to win. And when they're up 10 in the first half, and Barry Brown's on the bench in foul trouble with two fouls, you're thinking, yeah, this is K-State, man. Their defense travels. K-State's going to find a way to win. They just keep the lead, go in the second half, get Barry Brown back on the floor, because you knew Bruce wasn't going to put Barry back in. Although Cardi Ajata was back in there with two fouls, but not Barry Brown. More on that in a moment. But once again, there were so many K-State fans that are all riled up about Kansas going to Kansas City, and I told a couple of my friends that are K-State fans, I said, you need to quit worrying about that. You need to focus on the 13 seed. I said, I hope to God your coaching staff and your players on your team are going to focus on who you're going to play and not where you're playing or where someone else is playing. Because if you are not focused on UC Irvine, you're going to get beat. Now, I thought they'd find a way to win. They didn't. UC Irvine, a bigger team, a physical team, they're a better rebounding team. And then you factor in the foul trouble, which was the foul calling. It was ticky-tacky on both sides. I thought the officials could let them play a little bit. But when you have no Dean Wade, and I hate to be too critical of Barry Brown, because I think Barry Brown is a special player. He's an all-around player. He's one of the best players in the Big 12. And maybe the pressure was too much for him. Or maybe he just never got into a rhythm. And you can blame Bruce Weber for that. You can blame the officiating for that. You can blame Barry Brown for that. But I've said it over and over, and I think a lot of people believe in this, that when it comes to big-time games and big-time moments, you need your big-time players to step up and make big-time plays. And in this game against UC Irvine, Barry Brown didn't do that. Kamau Stokes had 18 points. Kamau Stokes, honestly, was, I don't know, he might have been K-State's best player down the stretch. He might have been the most consistent. at least offensively. No Dean Wade means Barry Brown's got to play well. And he didn't. He had 5 points. He struggled. And maybe he was trying too hard. Maybe he wanted it too badly. I think part of it is when you sit out 14 minutes of the first half, the final 14 minutes first half, and you're not into the game, you don't feel like you're a part of the game. It's tough to get into a rhythm. You go back out to start the second half, you sat for so long. And there is certainly some criticism out there from K-State fans towards Bruce Weber for the way he handled things with Barry Brown in the first half versus UC Irvine. Listen, I think it's the easy thing to do as a fan. I'm not gonna bite. I'm not gonna be a fish that grabs that worm and grabs that hook, because coaching is not easy. And I know we can be critical of coaches. You know, certainly, I've been critical of Andy Reid many times on the show, and I stand by those criticisms. I'm not going to waver. Should have taken care of his defensive coordinator position a year sooner. Came back to bite him. Might end up costing him a Super Bowl because he may never be back in that position again at Arrowhead hosting the Patriots. I stand by that. But here's the thing. For all those K-State fans, I'm going to present two sides of the story. And I totally get where K-State fans are coming from. I totally do. He's a senior. You can't trust him to play a little bit on offense or find the right chances to get him out there maybe on a dead ball situation to where he's at least a little bit involved instead of sitting on the bench the final 14 minutes of the first half. Listen, I get that. I really do. I think coaches too many times get caught up in the, he has two fouls, I can't take a chance on him getting a third. So what happens? They set the guy for the rest of the first half, and that's where the game could have been won. And a chance to really grab the game by the throat, and you're worried about a guy getting his third foul. Then he plays in the second half, and now it's almost, it could be too late in some instances, or you never get your mojo back. You know, it's interesting. In baseball, they talk about closers. They come in ninth inning to save the game. But, you know, sometimes the biggest higher leverage situations in baseball come in the sixth inning, the seventh inning. Bases loaded, jam one out. You're not bringing a closer in the bottom of the seventh, are you? So you're going to bring in your best reliever at the time for the best matchup to get out of a jam. And in essence, that guy saved the game. Then your closer comes in the ninth inning and mows him down 1-2-3, and you're up by 3 runs. And he gets credit for the save, when really the save occurred in the seventh inning. Same thing applies in basketball. And I know, I think I know what Bruce Weber was thinking. The officials are calling it ticky-tacky. These are the reasons why you should maybe consider that Bruce Weber had the right idea on this one. I'm giving you both sides of the story. I'll give you the Bruce Weber perspective. Kansas State had a lead most of the first half. They had a 10-point lead in the first half, and Barry Brown was on the bench. The officials, it was tick-tacky, it seemed, in that first half. What if Barry just breezes on somebody, gets a third foul? And if he does come in and get a third foul, then K-State fans would be like, what are you doing? Why is he in the game? We have a 10-point lead. Why would you bring him in when you have a 10-point lead? You milk it for as long as you can. If Barry Brown comes in and he plays great, K-State wins the game, everybody's like, well, Bruce Weber did the right thing. He put Barry Brown in. If Barry Brown comes in, gets his third foul right away, everybody's going to be screaming, Bruce Weber's an idiot. Why did he put Barry Brown in there? We had a 7-point lead, 8-point lead, a 10-point lead, a 5-point lead. Why did they put Barry Brown back in there? Listen, sometimes as a coach, it just doesn't work out. It doesn't work out. I will say I think Bruce Weber could have gotten Barry Brown in the game a little bit here and there, just to keep him involved and active in the game, but you are taking a pretty big risk of Barry Brown getting a cheap foul. Now, some people would argue you have to trust your senior to be smart enough to stay out of that situation. Sometimes you can get bumped by another player, run into another player, it's not your fault, and you get called for a foul. You go for a rebound, and the wrong guy gets called for the foul. That happens sometimes. So the best way to make sure that your key player doesn't get a third foul is to, well, be safe, keep him on the bench for the rest of the half, for the rest of the quarter, whatever the case may be. That's what Bruce Weber elected to do. And I think the biggest shot and biggest play of this game against UC Irvine was the three at the end of the first half. I mean, that was huge. Absolutely huge. And K-State, I don't know, man. It just, they had the lead at times in the second half, but you just got the feeling that once that three-pointer went in to close out the first half, that K-State was in trouble. And Barry Brown struggling and didn't only play 6 minutes first half. So I understand the angst. I understand the frustration from some K-State fans about Bruce Weber. And then there are people that are uninformed that are screaming, well, that's what Bruce Weber always does. He has this policy where you get two fouls, you can't come back in the first half. Okay, now you're not paying attention. Because the same exact game, Cartier-Jott had two fouls. He was back in the game. So what Bruce Weber's saying there is, I will roll the dice. I'd rather Cartier-Jott get a third foul than Barry Brown, which means Barry Brown's more important than Cartier-Jott, which is true. On this year's team, that is absolutely true. It's correct. So Bruce Weber, I think if K-State was down 10, I think Bruce Weber puts Barry Brown back in the game. If K-State's down 5 or 6, I think he might put Barry Brown back in the game. But when you have a lead for most of the first half, you're milking that as far as you can. As far as you can. And then make sure that you've got your star player with only two fouls to start the second half. Now, Johnny Dawkins yesterday, Central Florida Duke. Taco Fall, 7'6" tall. He's a game changer inside defensively and rebounding. He picked up two fouls with 11 minutes going the first half. Dawkins brought him back, Taco Fall, and he played from the 8-minute stretch to the 4-minute stretch without picking up a third foul. Then he sat him the final 4 minutes. And I think that's what some K-State fans would have liked Bruce Weber to have done. Go ahead. We're not saying he has to play the last 14 minutes of the first half, but get him in there a little bit so he's still involved, because he never found a rhythm in this game. So do you want to blame Bruce Weber that Barry Brown struggled? That's your prerogative. Do you want to blame the officiating for being ticky-tacky and getting Barry Brown foul trouble? That's your prerogative. You want to blame Barry Brown because he just had a bad game and in a big-time moment didn't come up big? That's your prerogative. I think you could throw all that together into one basket and say that's all fair. Every one of those points is fair. But listen, can you imagine K-State's up 10 and Barry Brown's in the game and he gets his third foul and K-State ends up losing the game? Can you imagine what K-State fans are saying today? Bruce Weber, what an idiot. You got to just let Barry Brown sit until the second half. Make sure he doesn't get a third foul. You're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't as a coach. To me, K-State should have still beat UC Irvine despite Barry Brown's foul trouble in the first half. They didn't. They didn't get it done. They didn't make shots. Maywean did a nice job, 14 points, 12 rebounds, and it was a disappointing loss. And so for the second time, Bruce Weber's got a share of a Big 12 title. His team's a 4 seed, and they lose in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Listen, it's always tough to end your season this way. It's really tough to see Dean Wade on the sideline not able to play. It's really difficult to see that happen for a kid that gave it his all at Kansas State but was hampered by injuries. It's tough to see Barry Brown get in foul trouble and then never get into a rhythm and have one of his worst games offensively of the year in a game that you need so badly to keep your season alive. It stinks. Welcome to the tournament. Welcome to the tournament. Yale, their top scorer, went 2 of 16 from the floor in a first-round game against LSU. They lost by 5. If he makes a couple shots, they probably win. Fletcher McGee for Wofford against Kentucky on Saturday, he's made the most three-pointers in the history of college basketball. Fletcher McGee of Wofford has made the most three-pointers of any player ever to play in college men's basketball history. You know what he did against Kentucky? He took 12 three-pointers. You know how many he made? 0. Biggest game of the year, their star player Wofford, Fletcher McGee, goes 0 for 12 from 3, and Wofford still was only down 2 with 30 seconds to go. And you just sit there as a Wofford fan going, what if he just makes 2 out of 12? I'll bet you Fletcher McGee could play. He might play in the NBA, he overseas. I'll bet you he'll never have a game. I don't know if he's ever had a game like that before in his life, and I'll bet you he'll never have a game like that in the rest of his life where he goes 0 for 12 from 3. But in the biggest moment, the biggest stage of his career against Kentucky, he went 0 for 12. Did he choke? I would say no. I would say it just wasn't his day. Did Kentucky force him into tougher shots? Yeah. Probably so. What are the odds that your greatest three-point shooter in the history of college basketball goes 0 for 12 in NCAA tournament from three? You know, what are the odds that your worst game of the year, offensively, for K-State's Barry Brown, was the first round of the NCAA tournament? Things like this happen, man. It's the cruelty, the cruel reality of the NCAA tournament. It is one and done. One and done. And Kansas, of course, has experienced this with all the horrible disappointment over the years, although it's been a long time since they lost in the first round. But, you know, I can think about all the times KU's lost in the tournament, and they were the better team. I mean, they were better than Bucknell. They were better than Northern Iowa. They were better than Bradley. They were better than VCU. I think they were better than Oregon a couple years ago. But at the end of the day, they didn't get it done. It's not like football where you hope to get into the playoff. No. They were selected. They were a high seed. They were the favorite in most of those games, and they just simply lost them. The other team was better that particular day. This is not a best 3 out of 5, 4 out of 7 series. You have to bring it. You have to be ready to play. You have to play well. If you're a 1 seed, can you bring your C game and win? Maybe. Although, ask Virginia how that went last year. The NCAA tournament is a playoff. And sometimes it's who handles the pressure the best is the one that moves on. And then sometimes it's just pure luck, like we saw yesterday with Central Florida and Duke, where the ball just rolls off the rim, so tantalizing and close to going in, and Duke's out of this tournament. I'll say right now, Duke will probably win the whole thing. Every team that wins the national championship, almost every team, or a team that makes the Final Four, almost always has a scare earlier in the tournament. That might have been Duke's scare. That might have been the one chance for somebody to knock off Duke, and now they might run the table and win a national championship. Once again, fine line between losing the second round of the tournament and winning a national championship. It is that small of a line, and it can be tough, but that's, we put ourselves out there as fans. We put ourselves out there as players and coaches to, in order to succeed, you must fail. And there's only going to be one team that's going to be really, really, really happy at the end of the year celebrating, and that's going to be the team in Minneapolis that wins the national championship. And most people think that's going to be Duke, although after yesterday, some people might be rethinking that. Now, Kansas State, one thing that was accomplished, no question about it, was these three seniors, Kamau Stokes, Barry Brown, and Dean Wade. Like I said, total bummer that Dean Wade couldn't play in this tournament, without question. And once again, there's bad luck. Sometimes you have good luck, sometimes you have bad luck. You know, Kansas got some good luck last year when Grayson Allen's shot didn't go in at the end of regulation against Kansas up in Omaha. Then Kansas didn't have any luck against Villanova. Villanova made everything they threw up there. And then you got Kansas State. You know, unlucky, Dean Wade unlucky with the foot injury. Here's Dean Wade talking about the change in culture since he came to Manhattan along with the seniors.
Light years difference. You know, it's unbelievable. We came in my freshman year. I mean, we were the lowest of lows, really were. You know, the fans didn't even like us. And so, you know, we knew we were the only people we had. You know, Barry came. You know, we were just like, we're us now. I mean, we got to turn this around. We're going to be hated forever. And so, you know, we came in, and I think we really changed the culture. You know, everyone really on our side now. And, you know, what we've done for everything in Manhattan. I mean, I think what Barry and Cam, everyone has done is just unbelievable.
You know, it's interesting how things happen in life. Think about this for a second. How would you feel about Dean Wade, Barry Brown, and Kamau Stokes, and Bruce Weber, had K-State lost in the first round last year to Creighton, but made it to the Elite Eight their senior year this year? Be a whole different feel, wouldn't it? And yet it's the exact same thing. It's just in reverse order and when it happens. Isn't that weird how that works? Can't explain it. Sometimes you make a run like they did last year. You catch a break. UMBC beats Virginia. You take advantage of that break. You make it to Elite Eight. This year, you get a 4 seed. You earned it. You got to share the Big 12 title. You earned it. You get to the first round of the tournament. You go to San Jose, and boom, over. Season done. Career over for your seniors. It's cruel, man. It's cruel, but it's sports. And that's why we probably love it so much. All right, big thing that happened over the weekend. Tom Izzo got in the face of a freshman player on his team in the first round of the NCAA tournament. This went viral. A lot of people don't know a lot about sports. Sorry, I'm going to just say it. People don't know a lot about sports, maybe never played sports, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Maybe they're a great athlete, maybe they weren't. Maybe they've coached, maybe they haven't. But I'm guessing from everything I see on social media, a lot of these people probably weren't, I hate to say it, probably weren't very athletic, probably never had a coach really go after them because they weren't good enough to be yelled at. And they, well, I don't know. Soft is the word I'm looking for, probably. So people had their opinion on Tom Izzo. He got after a player. He did. He got after a player. Guess what? After the game, did the player say, that's it, I'm not playing for Tom Izzo, I transfer? Nope. Did any of the other players throw Tom Izzo, the head coach, under the bus? Nope. Does Tom Izzo have a problem with players transferring out? I mean, Greg Marshall has more players that have transferred out of Wichita State than Tom Izzo has. It's not even close. In 1 year, Greg Marshall has more guys that transferred out than Tom Izzo has the last probably 8, 9, 10 years. Players play for Tom Izzo. He holds them accountable. But apparently, some people in this world, and this is happening more and more and more, we even see it locally. Oh, my gosh, the coach yells. How dare the coach yell at my kid? What, as a parent, you've never yelled at your kid? Is that only reserved for you to yell at your kid? Maybe so. Whatever. Maybe you never raise your voice to your kid. Okay, fine. Whatever. You know, when you get into life and you work for an employer, the employer, the boss, may get on you from time to time or try to hold you accountable if you're not living up to your expectations or living up to the job duties that you're supposed to carry out. It's called accountability. Now, are we saying that a coach should go strangle somebody like Bobby Knight did? No. No, 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 no. We're not saying that. Okay, that's assault, first of all. But if people are getting coaches fired at a high school level, at a college level, at a junior high level, at a pro level, because they're upset that their kid gets yelled at by the coach. Okay, there's different degrees of what you can get upset with. If the coach is always yelling at just one person all the time and no one else, okay, I probably understand it. More than likely, that's not the case. Here's Scott Van Pelt on ESPN Sports Center addressing all the people all upset about Tom Izzo getting on one of his players in front of the cameras at the NCAA tournament. This, my friends, you need to turn up the radio and listen. And if you've ever been guilty as a parent of overreacting to somebody raising their voice to your child, listen closely.
I spoke about Tom Izzo last night on the show. It was not a surprise to see it become a talking point on shows and on social media. This isn't about snowflakes or being soft. It is about a gigantic problem we have not only allowed to happen in society, but go out of our way to ensure gets worse. People seem to have a real issue when they're held accountable or if others are too harshly. We're so concerned with if anyone has had their feelings hurt that we lose sight of this fact. Life has a scoreboard. The world will be difficult, and we do nobody any favors when we coddle them to the point that they never hear criticism or hear a harsh word or have to face any adversity. Because when nobody in a job interview or negotiation stops to ask about your feelings and then you don't get the job or you don't get the contract, what are you going to do? Demand the world stop being mean to you? The college admission scandal is a great example of this. They say you should prepare your kids for the path, not the path for your kids. You cannot eliminate every challenge or adversity they might face. Because if you do, what have you accomplished? We're so concerned with safe spaces and not saying mean things that when a coach gets on a player, it's seen by some of you as out of bounds. And that is insane to me. Is that the only way to get your point across? No. You can go about it differently. But you notice who didn't have a problem with it? Michigan State. Did you notice what seniors Cassius Winston and Matt McQuaid did? They told Izzo, we got this. Because they have a voice. They've been empowered in a family dynamic that occasionally gets volatile. Because there's a scoreboard and they're trying to win. You know who else didn't have a problem with it? The freshman who was getting the what for, Aaron Henry. His social media, as well as the accounts of past Spartans like Miles Bridges and Draymond Green and countless other Spartans, gave insights into why they didn't and don't have a problem with it. But that doesn't matter to people who don't really want context. They just want to be mad and be offended. So be good and mad about how Tom Izzo yelled at his players. His players, past and present, have a rare loyalty to him. He doesn't have a transfer problem. He has the opposite, a bunch of four-year guys, the overwhelming majority of whom have gotten to Final Fours in part because of being held accountable the way he holds them accountable. You don't like it? Fine. Don't send your kid there. But stop being offended by things that don't concern you, because they're not.
And there's the thing, right there at the end. All these people on social media, everybody has an opinion, and they post on social media. Listen, if the kid himself and his parents and family and the team don't have a problem with what Tom Izzo did, which was coaching his player, then why does Joe Schmo in Timbuktu, why does his opinion matter? Shouldn't. Now, this to me is a story and would provide more opinions if the player is just like, that's it, I can't play for coach, I'm done, or the players had a mutiny against Tom Izzo and don't want to play for him anymore. Okay, then I understand it. But the people involved don't have a problem with it. And if you also, those people that have been ripping Tom Izzo because he got on a player, maybe you should look at some of the other video when Michigan State has lost games or had a heartbreaking loss, or see him on senior night, Tom Izzo, with his players. I'm going to go back to something that my coach told me way back when I was a freshman. And in essence, he got fired because of it. The school board at my school, of course, said he wasn't renewed, so it wasn't fired. Okay, tomato, tomato, whatever. When I was a freshman in high school, I was a decent basketball player. And towards the end of a practice, my coach, Mr. Griffith, I remember this to the day, and this was almost 30 years ago. So you don't think a coach can have an impact on somebody? A coach that coached me 29 years ago, I remember this vividly, and it meant the world to me, and it helps me when I coach youth sports, and I've actually used this when I've talked to one player about this as well. It was near the end of a varsity basketball practice. I played against the varsity as a freshman, and I played mop-up duty on the team at the end of games. Wasn't a key player, but I was one of the players, me along with one other freshman, that helped scrimmage against the varsity during the season and into late in the season as well. So we have a practice, and we're shooting around, and there was a rule in our practices was that when coach blew the whistle, you stopped. When coach blew his whistle, you stopped. And coach blew his whistle, and I'm 14 years of age, and I decided to jack one more three-pointer. After the whistle, I broke the rule, I jacked a three-pointer. Nobody else did, I did. How do you think my coach thought? What do you think my coach did? Do you think he was worried that somebody might be watching? Do you think he just let that go by? Because think about that. If you have a rule in place for everybody on the team, and somebody breaks that rule in front of everybody else on the team, and that person is not held accountable for breaking the rule, you know what the message that is sent? The message that is sent is, oh, coach has a rule, but he won't enforce it. Coaches are so worried, in some cases, unfortunately, about parents and what they're going to think. When coaches need to just get to the point where it's like, you know what, this is my team, I'm going to do it my way. If people don't like it, they can fire me and do it themselves. So, I shoot a three after he blew the whistle. That did not sit well with my coach. My coach yelled at me in front of the team. He didn't say bad words. He just raised his voice, yelled at me. He didn't go on forever. And as a 14-year-old young person, do you think my feelings were hurt? Yeah. My dad had yelled at me before, but my coach had yelled at me. So I had tears in my eyes, and I was kind of upset, immature at the time when coach yelled at me. I was just like, what's the big deal? So we finish our practice right after that with whatever coach had to tell us to the whole group. And then we go in the locker room to hit the showers. And as I'm moping with my head down, as I'm going towards the locker room, because I think deep down I'm embarrassed and ashamed that I did what I did, Mr. Griffith pulls me aside before I could go in the locker room, pulls me out into the gym, and it's just him and me in the gym. And Mr. Griffith tells me, he said, "Wade, do you know why I get on you sometimes?" I said, "No, sir." He said, "Because I think you can be a really good player. Because I think you have the ability to be a good player. And the day you need to be worried is not when I'm yelling at you in this circumstance. The day you need to worry is the day I quit getting on you to be a better person or a better player. That's when you should be concerned." Think about that for a second, ladies and gentlemen. The coach took the time, and I will bet you Tom Izzo has done the same thing with this player that's not in front of the cameras, in the locker room, and everything's fine, I would imagine. And he probably told his freshman, "Listen, I get on you because I think you can be really special or you can be really good. And the time that I quit yelling at you or I quit trying to get the best out of you is when you should be really concerned. You should not be concerned right now because I did get on you." Think about that message. Isn't that powerful? That was 29 years ago, ladies and gentlemen. I remember that from my coach. I was a freshman. After my junior year, going into my senior campaign, my coach was no longer my coach. For my last year as a senior, my coach was not renewed by the School Board of Education, and the only reason the school board would give to my family and to everybody else on the team was that he yelled too much. That's it. He yelled too much. And I still remember it today. I was there to support my coach at the board meeting, as were other players. And there are 7 board members, and 2 of them didn't show up. 2 of those board members, they went down one by one and voted whether or not to renew Mr. Griffith's contract as head coach at Waukini. And it was all set up, all staged, all planned out to a T. First 2 people said yes, and yes, they would renew. The next 3, no, no, no. We were told that, you know, had to be a majority of the 7. And so we thought, well, there's 2 board members that didn't show up. So that means they don't have enough votes to oust Mr. Griffith. They're not there to vote. Well, guess what? The rule of the game, I don't know if it's the same now as it was 29 years ago or 26 years ago, whatever it was. The rule of the game was that if you were absent as a board member, that counted as a no. So thus, my coach was ousted before my final year of high school basketball as a senior. The only reason given by the board was he yelled too much. When find out later, guess what happened? Coach apparently yelled at the wrong kid who had a parent on the board and then got enough people to oust him. And what still irks me to this day, ladies and gentlemen, is that 2 people, it's one thing that you're going to oust my coach. 2 of you don't have the decency to show up and actually vote. That's gutless. It's spineless. You hid and stayed home when you're elected to the School Board of Education to vote on things like this. And then when people are there to support the coach, you're not there to even say in front of everybody, "No, I do not want to renew his contract. I vote no." No, that's not how it went. 5 people there, 2 board members didn't show up. 3 people say no, 2 people say yes. We're like, here we go. Our coach can be back. We started to get excited. And then they explain the rules of the game. Well, those two people not here. I'm like, for me as a 16, 17-year-old kid at the time, I'm like, what in the world? You're not even here to vote. How does your vote count as a no when you're not even here to vote? And that's how they took out my coach, because he yelled too much. But guess what? I'm on the radio right now, 29 years later. And my coach didn't yell at me a ton. He got on me from time to time. But he did. He spurred me to be a better player. And I think that helped me to become a better person. And I think that's helped me to be a decent coach with my kid and other kids at a younger level. I'm not saying I'm a great coach, but I think that helps a little bit. But it does concern me and scare me that there are some, and I think we need to really stress this, there are some, I don't even think it's a majority. I think there are some, it's probably a minority of parents that are starting to rule everything. Whether they have power, whether they have connections, whether they just have thin skin. And they do what's best for them. They don't do what's best for the team. They don't do what's best for the school or the community. I've experienced that. I've dealt with it. And my senior year, every single senior in my class quit their senior year during the season, as we brought in nobody with any experience, which is a slap in the face to Mr. Griffith, brought in a guy who was still attending college at Fort Hays State University to be our head coach. Safe to say, my senior year was, well, very difficult. I was the only senior, although I thought about many times to quit, but I did not. I was the only one that stuck it out in my senior class. Then I had a couple of my teachers say to me my senior year, pulled me aside in the hallway. I remember Mr. Brown, my science teacher, science biology teacher. He pulled me aside and he says, "Wade, I just want to tell you something. I know it's been a rough year. I know things didn't go the way they probably should have. But I commend you for sticking it out and not quitting and seeing it to the end." That was 25, 26 years ago. I still remember that. And there's a teacher making a difference in my life as well. So sometimes we just need to pump the brakes a little bit. If you're a parent and you're all upset and mad because a coach got on your kid, you might want to at least take the time to sleep on it, cool off, and not overreact. Also, maybe it'd be good to talk to your own kid about these things, because there are parents that just run in immediately that want to get a coach fired without even talking to their kids about how they feel about it. Guess what? I didn't run home to mommy and daddy after my coach yelled at me as a freshman and cried and told my mom and dad, "Oh, I hate Mr. Griffith. He needs to go. How dare him yell at me?" Even though I was wrong because I broke his rule and I knew the rule. And I knew I broke the rule, but how dare he yell at me? No, I was raised not to be that way. And Scott Van Pelt, I think, put it so eloquently in that 2-minute editorial on SportsCenter in front of the national perspective. You have to figure out how to deal with adversity. And if your mom or your dad or your grandparents, your uncle, your aunt is going to always try to bail you out of every situation that you're in, whether it be in life, whether it be in sports, and they just want to rig everything to where everything's just hunky-dory all the time, guess what? You're in for a rude awakening when you get in the real world. Unless you're going to have parents like Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman, rich actresses that are going to get you in the school and cheat your way into school at Stanford, Yale, whatever it may be. Then everything might be great. They'll just take care of the rest of your life. You got nothing to worry about. For most of us, we don't have that luxury.